Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, peace. This is Brother Polite, and I just finished an interview with Hollywood Unlocked, Uncensored. It was great, man. I really appreciate it. Everyone's undivided attention, and I know oftentimes they have different types of shows and different types of conversations, and I was glad to contribute a level of diversity to their platform by speaking about wealth, growing wealth as far as finance is concerned, relationships, and socio-political events in the community. So I want to salute them for even having that type of conversation on their platform, considering how large their platform is.
What up, everybody? This is Jay Celine. This is Hollywood Unlocked Uncensored.
And this is Melissa Ford, a.k.a. The Curve Queen.
Your boy Giovanni. Hold up.
And we have our guest, Brother Polite, in the building.
Yes.
So I actually came to know who you were through Meta World Peace, who's a mutual friend. Last time I saw you were bowling, I beat everybody. So in case those of you are wondering. And then I had he had sent me the link to an interview that you did at the Breakfast Club, and I was just like, wow, because I had never heard of you before. But then I watched it, and anytime I see intelligent black people, I like to pay attention. I actually watched the whole thing, and I watched it again today so I could get refreshed. So okay, so tell the listeners who may have been living under a rock and not watching the hundreds and hundreds of videos and the books that you've written about who you are and like what your brand is about.
Cool. I'm Brother Polite, author of 90 plus books, and I do comparative studies on monotheistic religions and retrospects that I'm being influenced by cultures of antiquity, in addition to expounding on economics as well as holistic health. It transmigrated from me doing lectures nationwide to world over to taking on more intimate settings and individually and exclusively mentoring people. And the mentoring transcended into management.
So I saw that you, it said that you were a celebrity mentor. So now you manage celebrities as well?
Well, what happened was I wanted to leverage the relationships I had with a lot of the celebrities, because I'll be asked to help them with their diet or come up with some creative means to grow wealth. And then sometimes I'll just be invited to just hang out or to be smart. And I wanted to find a way to be able to monetize the relationships, because you know your network is your net worth. So it stops at the mentorship. So I then begin to think maybe with all the talented people that I know that's not on, I can kind of leverage the relationships I've created with people who have influence. And when they say Polite, you know, if you ever need a favor, you need a salad. Like maybe I could get somebody to do a track with somebody or, know, not necessarily money, just relationship based opportunities.
Yeah. So one of the I think I've been okay with monetizing my relationships. I'm not the best because I know everybody, but I don't really know how to manage all that. So how do you keep all of the relationships managed?
Okay, which relationships in particular? My personal relationship?
Well, we're going to get to the personal because I actually saw you on a video. I got a lot of questions asked. Okay, so in the business world, so like relationships. So for example, I know one of the owners of the Lakers. I know the Lakers. But I don't never call any of them. Do you call all your people all the time? Like, how do you manage everybody that you know?
Well, it depends on what it is that's required of me. But I've also found a great opportunity in connecting people together. So from me understanding what you do and understand, like, you may deal with radio, and then I may talk to someone who has an amazing product but lacks the opportunity to get their voice out there. And you may have an interest in that particular product. Unbeknown to you, there's a person there who y'all can find something that's mutually beneficial to embark upon. So what I would do is just use my network, create the opportunity, and then when it unfolds or it materializes, people to say, you know what? How did y'all put that together? Oh, Brother Polite did that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sometime I get PC from the situation, you know? So it works out. Or if it's a movie situation, I know someone who does screenplays, someone who's a director, and I put them together and they do a project. Perhaps I could get my daughter in the film. So it's not always money. It's opportunity that makes the most sense.
We need more of that.
Well, I think most of the stuff started happening for me when I stopped looking at every transaction having to come with a check.
That's a
because you know, when I first got to Hollywood, I felt like people were just using me, like, because I knew everybody. It was, oh, can you call Chris Brown? Can you call Ms. Ford? Can you call? And then I would just call people, and then I started getting bitter. So I was like, I ain't calling shit unless I get a check.
I've been there.
But so how do you get past that to saying, okay, I'm just going to keep putting it together?
Well, I learned I have to also multitask. So rather than marginalize myself to just being a lecturer, I took on debates. So in the same way, instead of just being a writer or author of my own books, I started ghostwriting. Mm-hmm. I helped Meta World Peace in some projects overseas and in the country. Football players like Ramsey Bolden, who won the Super Bowl with the Giants, Miss Black California. You know, so what I wound up doing is saying, hey, I know I write books, but if I had to write a screenplay, I'm going to have to educate myself. You know, I'm autodidactic, so I don't necessarily need the convention of a classroom for me to be taught. I can sit down and I have the discipline to do it myself. Mm-hmm. Now, I wasn't always doing book projects for people, but when the opportunity presented itself, I had to ask myself if it's within my capacity based on my skill set. So writing can encompass any of a number of things. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes we may only know our one talent. Like, you may be a rapper and never considered writing for other people. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's just learning the how multifaceted one talent can be. Mm-hmm. And then that way, rather than saying, man, this is the only thing that I brought to the table, mm-hmm. you can hear something and what someone else is saying and saying, you know what, rather than put them on to someone else, maybe I can dig within myself and become that as well. And that's how I've been able to use my relationships with people, mm-hmm. monetize it.
So today when I was getting ready for the show, I had to do some research because I had seen the one video. And usually we come, we turn on the mics, and we just have the most reckless conversations in the world. But I was like, there ain't no way in hell we don't have somebody this smart on the show.
Yeah, he was in group chat. He was like,
No cooning today.
And I will say,
we're going to let one interview go by without cooning. We don't have to ask
this. This is a great day for Miss Mel over here because she's the fact finder here. She's the one that's using all the words that no one can spell.
Oh, but he got some big words.
He just said autodidactic, and he heard me just exhale. Like, I was like...
First of all, we're filming this interview so I can go back and understand what we talk about later because I'm not going to have a clue. Okay, you know, though, when I was getting ready, I put the computer down to start getting ready. You sound like Jay-Z. Do people tell you that you sound like Jay-Z?
Yeah, they say my cadence a lot of times.
I was like, hold on,
Jay-Z. I didn't even hit it until right now.
Shit, I'm sorry, he used another one. It's one of my favorite words. Like, okay, so now I have to geek out for a second.
I was going to say clean the puddle up because he has four wives already.
I can appreciate the man and how intelligent he is without, you know, just putting a wet spot on my chair. So listen, I have a question for you because you have such an extensive vocabulary. I mean, that's an understatement. Did you like read the dictionary or something? Because I used to do that when I was a kid. I was a total geek. I used to love to read the dictionary and thesaurus because I had just such an appreciation and love for words, you know, and it just...
My ex did that and was still stupid. So did you read the dictionary?
Well, to an extent, the dictionary I was interested in is the etymological dictionary. I like to find the origin of words. Like, for instance, you look up the word nice. And etymologically, the word nice means ignorant. So then I asked myself, how did the meaning transmigrate to from ignorance to something that seems pretty positive? And you come to find that in the past, right, if someone did something good for you and you didn't understand why they did something good for you, then that was the epitome of nice. You was ignorant of why they're doing something good for you. Your mother may do something for you. You say, that's my mother. Your best friend may do something for you. That's your best friend. But if someone does something philanthropic and you're the benefactor and you have no idea why, then that was an instance of nice because you're totally oblivious to why they did that for you. And that's where that word comes from. So I just like the history of words because I believe that words, of course, have a connotation. They have some kind of resonant frequency. They impact us. And I always wonder if the word in its inception, its intention, when it was created, does it afflict or empower us based on the people who put it together first?
That's powerful.
You know, so I always wonder about this. So I'm very critical about the words we use. Like, for instance, in our culture, we say, what's cracking, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's popping? Mm-hmm. You know, we say, my nigga, right? Mm-hmm. And it could be a slave master phraseology for the most part, right?
Right.
It's in our DNA when we hear my nigga, there's a part of us that cringes as well, mm-hmm. as feels like it's a term of endearment. And so when I contemplate on these matters, I then look at other world cultures And they may say Salam Aleikum, they may say Shalom or Masalam. They invoke peace from the time they see each other for the very first time. Mm-hmm. And I see how progressive they are as a community. So then I say, dang, I wonder if we're not invoking something positive but provoking something negative, because the first time we see each other, something's probably cracking or something's probably popping. But the second other cultures see each other, they wish each other peace immediately. Mm-hmm. And I see they appear to be way more progressive than my people. So I decided to change the invocation or my communication from the time I first see you.
So there's a lot of criticism around the Black Lives Matter movement. I was a part of the Trayvon Martin campaign, led that with Sabrina Fulton years ago. Since then, we've seen many Trayvon Martins happen. And then there's been this whole controversy. One of our partner sponsors, Floyd Mayweather, said all lives matter, and the internet went fire. It just went crazy. What is your view on Black Lives Matter versus all lives matter independently and collectively in a conversation?
Well, I was criticized for agreeing with Floyd Mayweather.
Okay.
But I always make it clear I'm not quite sure where he comes from with it. But when I look at people like a Floyd, based on what I do know from the narrative of the stories that's told about him and his parents and the white man who interceded and helped him develop his skill set or went there along the way when his uncle couldn't handle him or his father couldn't handle him and then his uncle couldn't handle him again, but that white man helped him season his talent. And then there's Mike Tyson who had his white trainer, right? Mm-hmm. And so I know living in the hood, I was raised on the white man's the devil. That's what I was raised on. Mm. And as
I, that's what you were, that's, that was the foundation of your belief.
Well, I had three foundations. My father, when he was in my life, he was a firstborn, a 5%er, and he was, so he was a black Muslim and the white man was the devil. The black man is the cream of the universe. That's what we know. And then my mother's side, I didn't know my mother. She died the week I met her when I turned 17. But my mother's side was Sunni Muslim. And then my grandmother, who sent me to Holy Rosary Catholic school, obviously was in Catholicism. So I had three gods.
Wow.
Remained poor throughout the course of all three of them. Mm-hmm. So neither one of the three was responding to the situation. Probably was praying wrong. But whatever the case may be, I know from being in the hood, the conflict that arises from having people not of your ethnicity imposing or enforcing policy. Mm-hmm. They don't have a sense of our culture or our paradigm. And so the conflict is there and reservations are created. And so maybe not all police are bad, but it's just a bad scenario for people that are not part of the community or represent the demographic of that community to enforce policy. And thus, they came off as the devil to me. And then being locked up, I was in shelters, juvenile detention facility, Rikers Island for murder and everything. So the white people in there obviously came off to me as the devil as well. So it reinforced the conviction of those teachings. So I was more inclined to believe in those teachings. As I began to grow wealth and started to travel the world, I started to experience situations and I tried my best to deny the fact that I was meeting people of other races that were very positive and didn't fit the mold of the devil. And I started meeting black people that started fitting the mold of the devil.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I was trying my best to resist it. But eventually I had a revelation onto my people and they said I was cooning. Mm-hmm. Right? So we go back to Floyd Mayweather. And I say that the people who are from the black community, who have gained a great deal of wealth, who may take on a perspective that all lives matter, I don't believe they say it to be combative to what black lives matters mean. I know black lives matter is more socially, politically based. But when people say all lives matter, I don't think they're in combat or in conflict against the political movement of black lives that are being senselessly killed. I don't think it's against it. I think it's a proposition that outside of the context of what we deal with in our diaspora here in America, there's the bigger picture as well that, you know what, there's people that's going to do right by you. And we don't want to undermine any life at that particular point. Like, if all lives didn't matter, we wouldn't be upset if Trump got into office. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. His life matters because the things he does impacts everybody in America.
Right.
Yeah. So, and then I look at it on another level, that the celebrities that say all lives matter, you got to look into their world and realize white people have played integral roles in their development or in their growth or in their edification. How do you deny a person who has been positively impacted by someone of another race? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you tell them that despite their influence, despite their contribution for the positive, that you need to disregard that and be exclusively black? Like, and why do I have to be anti-white to be pro-black?
Well, it's almost like right now, Floyd is friends with Donald Trump. They've been friends for years before he decided he was going to run for office and before he said all this stuff. And so I think you know, because I have a personal relationship with Floyd, I understand that.
That's
but
what I'm
to outside world, people feel like any of us, and you, me, Melissa, any of us, Gio, any of us go to the White House and try to get involved with politics, even if our intention is to do good for our communities, yeah. We're cooning. Mm. What do you think about that?
It's just a social double standard that's created by people, mostly in part from impoverished communities. It's a poor mentality concept. You don't have to be poor to have a poor mentality. And I'm not picking on people that have less than money, but a lot of these generalizations and concepts come from people who don't travel. Like, if I were to ask somebody, what's the opposite of blue? What color would you say if we had to come up with a color?
Opposite of blue?
Yeah, if we had to come up with a color.
Opposite of color of blue?
Yeah.
I would say red.
I would say red, too.
Say red, right? Yeah. And this is what I'm talking
about. But I wasn't thinking of Bloods and Crips.
No problem. Okay. Of course.
Because I know you're a Crip. We're a Crip, is a Crip. I don't know. Can you ever stop being a Crip once you're a Crip?
I think you could not be banging.
Okay.
Right.
You know, I'm not
but
banging.
It lives in
I'm not a banger.
Okay.
I'm not active.
But I got a question.
Yeah.
Why did the Crip cross the road?
Because.
You know what? Today's show involves no cooning. I can't. So, no, because my friend behind you, he's white. I think he's white. I don't know, he's Australian. But he invited us. Melissa and I, we went to Japan.
Yes.
And we went to his family owns a resort in Japan, which I never even fucking thought I would go to a ski resort anywhere, but let alone in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But as you travel and as you do get exposed to other cultures and just, you know, traveling through a country where nothing is English,
mm-hmm.
you know, or nobody speaks English. It's mm-hmm. like, it does force you out of your comfort zone.
And this is the point I was making, because if we ask what's the opposite of a cat, we would naturally say
a dog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ask what's the opposite of blue, we here would have an inclination to say red. But there's really no logic behind it other than the proposition of opposition.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned later on that there really is no opposites, just things varying in degrees on a pole. There's no such thing as the opposite of 85 degrees. But if 85 degrees appeared to be in conflict with another temperature in our community, we then would come up with something like, we would say the opposite of hot is opposite of hot is cold. But if I were to ask what's the opposite of a giraffe, then we would go blank. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying? Because we don't see it in our community.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see a conflict between the giraffe and something else in the community to make those opposing fields. So for us, we may say the opposite of black is white. And that makes perfect sense, depending on the community you come from here in America.
Mm-hmm.
But as you travel the world and you experience different people, that thing that we call opposing fields, we realize it's just varying in degrees on the pole, and these are all illusions. So you can only go, I mean, there is a left technically because it's personal. So left belongs to me on this arm. Mm-hmm. But if I was to tell you, come out the train station, make a left and walk down two blocks, and you didn't find me, it would be a matter of my left, because personally, I have to make this make sense. But outside of my body, my up is someone else's down.
Mm-hmm.
You feel me? Like, we're on the floor, but this is someone else's ceiling.
Perception.
So we have to make it personal for mm-hmm. it to make sense. But mm-hmm. if we was to take ourselves outside our body
mm-hmm.
and just see things for what it is, we wouldn't be upset if somebody was friends with somebody else.
Because
mm-hmm. we could just understand and appreciate the fact that this is a circumstance that exists outside of what we immediately experience day to day. So these the opposites and the opposition is just illusion.
So we joke on this show a lot about Giovanni's in a relationship, but he doesn't have much sex. But I think that's by his own choosing. But he's in a relationship. And I always ask, like, would you give your girl hall pass? Would you have a hall pass? You don't need a hall pass because you own the hallway. So let's talk about this. So you're known as being a polygamist, right?
Yeah, or polygyny more specifically.
Okay, now, are you actually married to four women, like ceremonial?
Not under American law, because that would be bigger.
Because it would be illegal. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes, so, but I have contracts with each one of the sisters that I'm in a relationship with.
Would those be considered prenups?
Concubines?
To that extent. And I will, we just believe, if I decide to get into a serious relationship with a sister, then I would give her, like, in concept, a form of dowry. So in the event we were to separate, I would already put my money where my mouth is and say, hey, if we separate, I'm interested and personally invested in making sure you was not an economic slave to me during the course of our relationship.
Okay.
I want to make sure you have something to
break that
up.
Shit down. Wait.
Let's slow down. Okay, so let's back up. Okay. All of your wives are gorgeous. I actually watched the video. I mean, I had to do some research. Like I said, yes. There was no way you're going to slide up in here and then me start to talking and I don't know what I'm talking about. So how did you meet all of your individual wives? And what is the courting process for onboarding a new wife? Like, can you be in line at United and you meet somebody and then she's the fifth one? Or how does this work?
I have to piggyback off that question. Are the wives involved in the courtship process? Like, do they have say in... Yeah, I like that one. And okay, well,
that's the interesting thing. Yeah. I do have a say, but they have most to say because there's children involved. So okay. I can't decide I'm going to bring somebody in the house with people that I've been with for years, and I have the only say. I have to make sure the chemistry is right, so they have the final vote if the woman could be there.
So when you first decided, because Floyd Mayweather is, what is the word? It's not polygamous, but what is it?
I would say polygynous.
He's a polygynous. Okay, so he has his harem, and we've interviewed him here, and he's described that. And I actually saw you did a video on YouTube where all of you were in the video together, and I text Floyd this morning. I said, I got to get you and all your people. We need to get that. Okay, so how does this work? So how did you meet the first one, and then did you already have in your mind that you were going to have more than one?
Well, the first wife I've been with is Aminette right here. I've been with her for 19 years. We've been together since 12, 13 years old. I'm 33
wow.
now.
Okay.
Wow.
So we've been together for most of half my life, of course.
Okay.
And both are half our lives. So long story short, I was locked up. I came home from prison. And yet again. And she was like, look, I can't make you what you make on these streets, but I believe that you have a potential and something about you that can get us both out of this situation. I believe the world needs you. Mm. And you don't see it. So naturally, I'm looking at her like, what happened in between the time I was locked up? Because she was had the neck moving and the eyes rolling and permed hair and all that. She did everything that they do, right? When you in the hood. So I was kind of looking at her like, what happened? Mm. And she was just like, yo, listen, I got a lot of confidence in your mind, more than you have in yourself. And I believe there's something about you don't know about yourself. So she said, I work two jobs. I'm willing to give you one check. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to just buy you book after book after book. I've been outside asking people what's a good book for my man to read. So I got a bunch of different authors, you know, like Dr. Ben and John Henry Clark and different people. She's like, look, I got a bunch of authors that I want you to just look through. And whenever you find yourself and you find that way out, I'll see you through. Until which time, I'm going to give you one of my checks. And if you need some of the other check, I'll give it to you. So I'm looking at her like she wilding. And I'm like, you just want me to stop hustling because them checks ain't going to do nothing for mm-hmm. me. I was dying mm-hmm. for them first 2 months. But I did it, and I found myself. She made me conscious. She's the reason I even started reading and studying. She forced me to. I didn't want to lose her because mm-hmm. she was going to leave me, wow. and I didn't want to lose her. So I had to read or she'll leave.
Wow.
So I chose to read.
That is the dopest story.
And so then after she did that investment and then you found yourself wanting another woman, how did that?
Oh, no, it didn't happen. Like, she wouldn't have done that. I would not have read books for 6 months and okay. said it's time for another woman. That came some years down the line. But we wound up growing into our new perspective and thought and making change in the way we eat and drink. And eventually I wound up making soap, lotion, deodorant, hair grease, body spray, and even my own Pampers. And for everything that I thought was wrong with other products, like the Pampers cause asthma that a lot of us use. So I started creating my own Pampers by hand. And, of course, a lot of the makeup or cosmetics has what's called phthalates in it, right? And those are like metals that seep into the pores of the skin. And, like, if you look at prostitutes that's constantly wearing makeup, over years you see their skin kind of being brought down because the metals, in conjunction with gravity, starts pulling down on their face, literally. So I started making alternative soaps and products, and I would go on a train and teach for X amount of seconds. I would memorize how many seconds it takes to get from Bowling Green to Wall Street.
The train in New York City.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I used to go in, and then I taught her how to do it, and we was doubling up, and eventually we got a bookstore, and I would fill up the store with all of my own soaps, lotions, deodorants, and hair greases, and then I said, well, I'm gonna put books here. But I want to put books here that I totally agree with. So I'm like, I got to learn how to write. So I came out of the newspaper first. In time, we wanted to make a child, but I became very meticulous in the things that I was reading, you know, like Claude Anderson, Powernomics book. I was really starting to get into the economic aspect of things and saying, damn, my parents didn't really plan the way they could have planned. No knock to them. We use whatever information is accessible to us at that time. Mm. But I said I didn't want to repeat the process, and we was talking about making a child. And that's when we started talking about polygyny, because we understand that wealth begins at $150,000 a year, and we should be able to invest at least one-third of our wealth, which would put us at a 50 grand marker. But we understand poverty begins for a family of four at $32,000 a year and for an individual at $15,000 a year. So we understood we was in poverty, actually. We actually understood we was in poverty. And we knew we had 100,000+ hike to get to the point of wealth, because 5%, the 5% is in wealth in economics are the people that have the ability to invest without hurting themselves at $150,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So having considered that, we was like, man, you and I combined still keeps us almost in poverty. So it's like we have nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's when we started to factor in or the possibility of polygyny. And if we brought another sister in and maybe we could fulfill her goals, there can be some reciprocity because we wanted to make a child, but we did not want to make a child in poverty.
So are they, so you wouldn't, but okay. So how does this contract work? Because we asked the question of a hall pass. There's no hall passes in your house.
It's just straight up. The contract works as follows. If we decide that it's serious, because still would be a courting process. And for the duration of time in which we decide, okay, you know what? This process has met its maturation. We want to really get serious. Then that's when a contract could be drawn up and I will have something that I could give off. Like she owns 65% of my publishings. Mm. So no matter what happens if we break up with the 90 plus books that I've written and any other books I wrote for other people, she's always going to own that percentage. And we've decided that that does pretty good by her.
So in your home, you all live together. You're one family.
We do. But everyone has their own home.
Really?
And their own business. Every woman.
Interesting.
We are fascinated. It wouldn't be right here. If I couldn't do it. Jason's trying to take notes on the mental notes have been taken.
I wish.
Okay, so do you ever, and I know we're being personal, but do you?
It's not a problem. Okay. Once you get as personal as possible.
Do you all ever have group sexual encounters?
I ventured off into that.
Okay. And but because one thing I think that is amazing about watching your wives interact is they all seem to get along.
Yes, sir.
How do you manage that?
You say yes, sir.
It's a family. So just like people say, man, they don't get jealous. I'm like, do brothers and sisters get jealous? Siblings? You know, do sometimes, fathers get jealous when their children embrace other people that are kind of like parent figures? Mm-hmm. It's a human trait.
Yeah.
You feel me? So the first thing we have to establish is the fact that jealousy is normal. Mm. And once we come to terms with that, it'll work itself out.
Y'all gonna hear me saying these. These aren't even lines. These are now my new beliefs.
Can I ask you a question? Let's just talk about in the household. What's an argument look like? It seems like you're so calm. Like, do you have a way of?
First
like,
of all, these big ass words. He gonna talk you out of being mad.
That's what I'm saying. What's an argument like with Brother Polite?
They called me a lawyer. And I don't need a lawyer
because you have states. You be having states, and because you it's no arguing with you. Like, I can't talk you down.
Well, I tell you this, having so many wives or female counterparts or significant others, it's the reason why I'm real good at doing debates. Because they challenge me.
Yes. Closing deals.
And, but it keeps me disciplined because you can't go into another room and say, I'm just going to have a conversation and sneak and have sex and come out and act like you're not having sex. Like, you can only play that game for so long before it's like we know what you're doing, right? So you have to be disciplined.
So I was looking online and reading everything I can and listening to everything I can. And we always know there's two sides to your story. Mm-hmm. So a long time ago, Melissa, I remember being in your apartment in New York. And you said to me that the way that a person can take away the legitimacy in any woman is by calling them a hoe.
Yeah.
And to take away the legitimacy of a man is to call him a fraud. So you've had your debates online or your, because I saw there's different videos of you online. Mm-hmm. You either are speaking today very calm and very intellectually, just the savagery is just really amazing.
Or he's at the corner of 34th and 7th.
And like, you are just Malcolm X-ing it down.
Yes.
Okay. So there's this video I ran across with this guy named Prophet. You know who that is?
Prophet. Probably. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So
Prophet of God?
No, I don't know what he's a prophet of.
I'm just saying.
So what was the conflict? What was the conflict where they were saying that you were scamming them? And because the conversation, I'll be honest, the debate was so damn highbrow for me that I checked out about 15 minutes in. I said, I'm just going to ask him when he gets here at 3 o'clock.
Well, I think it's a slave mentality. Well, of course, let me say this. When I first started coming up and I started employing other people to be part of my company, when they did wrong, the ills fell on me. And mm-hmm. it's something that they will never let me live up to this very day. Because I had to eat those. I had to take the L's for anything that went wrong. Like any other business.
Well, you're the boss.
Yeah.
Or creator.
I can't say this person didn't mail the book out or this person didn't mail the DVD out. I have to take the L. Since then, I grew and I've created a great opportunity. And unfortunately, I had to use people that also had more technical experience and even certification. Mm-hmm. When you first start, you try to do the pro-black thing, you put everybody on.
You know, yeah.
And then people see amounts of money they never saw before. Mm-hmm. As I grew far beyond my own imagination, I had to realize who wasn't doing the work in my growth to realize how much I grew, you know? So mm-hmm. I was content with the monies that they was turning over to me because mm-hmm. I didn't know how much my books were selling all over the mm-hmm. world. until I found out that I wasn't getting a lot of my money. Mm-hmm. Wow. And I had to move those people out. And then separate from that, there's this thing with the slave mentality. Because as a slave, you see that any Negro or nigger that has the slave master gives him his food, his clothing, and his shelter. And if any black man has that, you can't really conceive that they got it outside of the convention of the white man giving it to them. And so what I find with my community, I wasn't really supposed to leave. I was supposed to stay in the projects, Brownsville houses, with my wives and children. I was supposed to keep it real, probably buy a nice car and live in the hood with the nice car parked in front of the projects. Once I left, this thing became that I'm Illuminati, that I sacrificed one of my children to become successful in Hollywood. And what I come to terms with is the fact that a lot of our people believe that if you're successful and you're black, you had to come with some kind of compromise, that you had to sell out, that you had to brown nose, that you had to kiss the white man's ass. They'll never give me the credit for what I've achieved in my own capacity. They'll never say, you know what, he's intelligent enough to do that good. They'll always find a loophole. Mm-hmm. They'll always accredit it to somebody doing something for me because I had to do something wicked. They'll never say, you know what, this man understands tax liens. He understands tax deeds. He understands annuities. He understands economics. They'll never accredit me for what I know. They're always work in an endeavor to say there's some kind of conspiracy or somebody has given me an opportunity in exchange for my compromise.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because all the videos I saw, there were all these different videos from different people. I really couldn't get the concrete, what is the issue? You know, it almost seemed like, because there was the video that you did where you were speaking out about what seemed to be a conspiracy. And we hear conspiracies, always conspiracy. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at all these different people that have this opinion, this really strong opinion about you, but there's no facts. Like, yeah. I'm just like, what the hell did he do? Like, what are you talking about?
It's also
Do you think that's a way of them trying to take away your legitimacy, that you kind of carved out this space that you're leading now? Do you think it's like people trying to just take that away or what?
Yeah, well, I believe no great man or woman is without it. You know, when you look at Floyd, they'll say he can't read or he beats women. You look at Serena, they'll say she's really a man. You look at Jordan, they say he had gambling problems. He may have even been responsible for his father's death. Damn. You feel what I'm saying?
Like, it's true.
You can't name somebody that they don't attach something that's going to stick with you for the rest of your life. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, you could do a million good things for somebody, but they're going to always remember the bad.
It's always going to be that thing.
But to his point, what we're saying is it's not about remembering the bad. Because when I led the Trayvon Martin campaign, I had never sold T-shirts. So I know what the fuck selling a T-shirt name tells. You print the motherfucker, you put it in a box, you mail it out.
Yeah, no.
First of all, I was mailing them in the wrong boxes. Mm-hmm. Then when I finally started to figure it out, there were so many orders coming in that it was just hard to manage it all. I had somebody that I trusted to manage it. I ain't gonna say his name. Maddie, he's in Vegas. Fucked everything up. And just ruined it all, you know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I took a little hit because it was just like, you know, person doesn't get their shirt. They paid their $30. You stole their money. So I feel like I was unclear as to what the conspiracy was.
The biggest conspiracy is, and this, my publicist and I, we struggle with this all the time. His name is Dennis Byron. Mm-hmm. He struggle with this all the time. I can show you one of his most recent texts. Polite, you got to stop showing out. You got to stop showing.
What does he mean by showing out, though?
Well, like the new car I got downstairs, my i8. You know, I still have my Ghost, though.
Nice.
You
know what I'm saying? About that. But,
did they say stop showing out because then people will try to throw that spin on it that somehow there's some scamming going?
He's into protecting me. But I'm like, there's no way I got a $300,000 car, a $150,000 car, and the Bentley I gave my daughter that I put suede all over. There's no, I mean, how many people would I have had to take from to get that? Right. In addition to me living in Beverly Hills and having apartments that I rent out. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 33. They say you act like you never had nothing before. And that's because I never did. Mm. That's why I behave the way I behave. I'm behaving like someone who never had.
I've watched a lot of the same interviews that Jason did. And, you know, I was really intrigued to see your dialogue with Charlamagne, you know, because he just wrote his book, Black Privilege. And the themes inside of the book are very in line with a lot of, you know, your ideologies, you know. And so I was literally sitting there with popcorn just watching that interview take place because, you know, he's a very close personal friend of mine and of Jason's. And so did you get an opportunity to read his book?
Yeah, I got his book.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure.
I had to get it the second it came out.
Yeah.
I missed him when he came to the Grove to do a signing.
Yeah, so did I. So did I. I had something else to do. But I've read the book and it's fantastic. And you talk a lot about, you know, social responsibility, personal responsibility within the Black community, yeah, to not always just rely on, oh, the white man's keeping me down, et cetera, et cetera.
It's one of the reasons they dislike me and call me a coon.
Exactly. That part of the responsibility comes from within.
That's
to
right.
Not acknowledge, to not let, you know, the, you know, chains kind of like proverbial chains kind of hold you back from your own greatness. But you yourself have to recognize your own That's greatness right. and work for it.
When I gave up that ideology, and I understand, mm-hmm. I know the historicity of America.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand what non-Blacks have done to Black people. Mm-hmm. I understand the crimes that they perpetrated against mm-hmm. our people. Mm-hmm. I educate my children on it.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them to take into consideration. I have fair skepticism with anyone non-Black
mm-hmm.
that offers me opportunity because of the stigma of the history of America, mm-hmm. not because I want to be against them. However, I will not share the same amount of skepticism for my brother or sister. And the reality is, you embrace people based on how they contribute to your world. And everyone's innocent until proven guilty in my world. That's the conclusion that I've come up with.
Mm.
Because experience has allotted to me a more profound point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone doesn't share the same experiences, which is what I expressed to my brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't leave the neighborhood and don't come back. I come. I'm loved in Brownsville, where I'm from,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I do work in Baltimore. I get gang members to give out food, vegan food at that. So it costs, you know, in New Jersey, the Hoovers, Crips, and Baltimore, the Blood. Shout out to Big Wolf and mm-hmm. PFK Boom. They put the pain in no matter who's there and mm-hmm. constantly feed the homeless out there. And so, because I come from gang culture, I feel that people restore their humanity when they help somebody that's conceiving a child
mm-hmm.
in freezing cold with no food. It kind of brings things back into perspective and you realize we shouldn't be killing each other.
Yeah.
There's people out here who have children with no jacket on and we're spending our money on guns to take away a life instead of putting money into people who are giving birth
mm-hmm.
and creating life opportunities. So it's the hardest thing I've ever had to go through was realizing I need to leave the community. It's mm-hmm. like, you damn if you do, you damn if you don't. If I stay there, they probably want to rob me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they,
oh, absolutely.
They'd be mm-hmm. jealous. They feel entitled to mm-hmm. what I got going on. But then when you leave, you know, it's like
you're
selling out.
Right.
But I'm mm-hmm. saying, like, I can see the local drug dealer on the corner. And the dynamic of it all is so horrible that you become friends with the situation,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then what I say is people have to walk past the pimp, walk past the prostitute, walk past the drug dealer, walk past those selling liquor and other forms of narcotics in the community to get on their computer and come to me 1,000 miles away and say something to me on YouTube. But you walk past the criminal that you say you hate every day en route to your computer.
Mm.
But I understand it. You feel what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's cowardice.
Yeah.
And it's also selective because mm-hmm. the reality is this, you know, why would I want to raise my child in an area where there's a higher probability of learning the things that I want to teach them against.
Mm.
You know, and they said, I made a statement and I said, you know, I don't want to live amongst the animals. And they said, you say, oh, your people are animals. I said, I ain't call my people animals. But I know where I'm from. I said, I don't know what neighborhood you're from, so pardon me. But where I'm from, we say we going beast mode.
That's
you feel
animal.
What I'm saying? We call each other bitches, female dog. Nigga, I'll go ape. You feel what I'm saying?
Mm.
And when you limit people on resources, you don't exactly need a college degree to survive. You got to rely on your animal instinct to survive. So I said, for the pedophiles in our community, you feel me? For the people senselessly killing each other, embarking upon a fratricidal war amongst each other, that's animal behavior. And I don't want my children to be subject to it and lose their faith in who we are as a people. I would like to separate them from that environment so they can have a fair contrast of what's transpiring so they don't believe that that is them.
Because
when you're in that neighborhood for so long, you not only do you adopt the principles, you adopt the mentality. You become it. And then it's hard to separate yourself from it. I've taken a number of brothers out of that community, even brought them in my house and let them live with me out here. Most of them fail. most of them want to go back in there. They think they want to be free. They think they want to grow wealth. They think they want to live in better neighborhoods. And they feel like a fish out of water when I bring them out
is
here.
That, would you call that like a sense of like institutionalization?
That's what it is.
Yeah.
I found more peace in prison in a lot of ways than I did living in the hood.
Yeah.
Where I'm from in Brownsville, a few blocks away from my home, they created a prison for juveniles. Mm. And one day I wound up in it. I had to walk past that juvenile prison to go to school.
Yeah.
With the concept that one day I'm going to be in there and I wind up in there.
Well, I mean, a lot of times
yeah, I'm raise my child in
prisons
that.
Are built around, you know, low reading levels, you know, like they basically, you know,
well, lack of education, lack of access. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like the anticipation that you're going to be a born criminal.
Especially you know? When they build the prison in your neighborhood for you to walk by while you have to go to school. So, why would I want to raise my child to see the future like that?
Exactly.
So what do you think? So we've interviewed Floyd here, like I said earlier, and he spoke on his dislike for the word nigga. And Oprah has talked about it, and it's been a big debatable topic among, you know, people in television and music. What is your thought on the use of the word nigga?
I'll tell you this. I don't support it like I used to. Mm-hmm. And that's because of the responsiveness from the people. I will tell you, though, because I'm into etymology, that all throughout the course of Africa, like even in the Bible, they call Simon Bar, Jesus, a nigga. We might say Niger or Niger, how we want to do it, but it's pronounced nigger, right? Mm-hmm. Simon Bar, Jesus, brother, is called a nigga in the Bible. Okay, I think it's book of Acts chapter 13, but that's another story. Then you have a country called Niger or nigger, but they call it Niger, right? And if you go to Ethiopia, nigger is a title of nobility that denotes an Ethiopian sovereign. It's pronounced nigger. And so when white people came to colonize, they couldn't stand us niggers because we were kings. Niggers were kings.
Yeah.
They hated niggers. And they hated niggers so much that when they incapacitated us, when they subjugated us, it took on a negative connotation because they didn't like niggers. So they enslaved niggas.
So the word,
and so these niggas that were kings got on their nerves. So anytime they saw a black person, we reflected or demonstrated that sovereignty. And eventually, we cringed at being called a nigga because the affliction associated with the terminology. Now, does this give us license to call each other nigga now? That's where I think the debate is, if I understand the history of the word. But I understand in its colloquial meaning, as far as present day is concerned, it's a destructive term. Because we don't put the onus on each other to understand the history of the word, to know how it should resonate with us when it's said.
Right.
So I get it. But if we're going to go into the history, then I'm a real nigga.
Most people
it's in my genes.
Yeah. Most people don't know that that's the history. We were actually just talking about the word itself because it had been spray painted on LeBron's LA home.
I just saw that today.
Yeah, and I was talking about the word, you know, just because I love the fact that you're talking about etymology and just the sound of the word. It's the hard consonants, the N, the G, the R. You know, to hear the history of the word and it actually being a positive history just kind of negates the feeling that word even gives you, because it's so hard on the ears.
It's no
phonetically
different.
It's just so hard on the ears.
It's no different from the word black. There was a point in history where black was considered racist, to be derogatory, and nobody wanted to be called black. There's a point we embrace Negro. Now you say Negro and people kind of know you're saying something negative.
Colored.
You feel me? But the ultimate problem is we've always allowed people to come up with the euphemisms that'll lead us into the next generation. We never have our own consensus and say, this is what we're going to be called. Nobody else allows anyone else to coin a term to be affixed to them. We do it. Then after they call us nigga, then they're like, we want to take it away from you. They want to have meetings about how the word shouldn't be used.
And then we make songs called Niggas in Paris. So I don't know what the fuck.
It's confusing, you know, but ultimately, like I said, we have to take control of the narrative. And in order to take control of the narrative, I believe we have to take control of our language or a language or create one like I did.
Okay, so we have actually run out of time.
Damn, man.
I know. We need to do a part two.
But let me say this. Yeah, we've never interviewed anybody twice, but we'd like to. You should come back next week if
you
can.
I'm with you.
Like, and then we'll put it on calendar so we make sure you get here on time.
Yeah.
And then we'll make sure we dedicate the whole show, because what I'm intrigued about is, you know, this show, we go from talking about ball gags and his anal beads, and it's good to have a well balanced conversation, because I really feel like, you know, why I quit the Trayvon Martin campaign was I looked at the lunacy of how we on one hand say it's wrong that you gun him down, but then on the other hand, unless it's a politicized opportunity for people to kind of elevate, they don't care.
That's
and
a fact.
It was just to the point to where I was like, then I don't care anymore. You know, so I'm like, wow. But that's I think there's just so much more that we should talk about if we could do next week again.
Yes, because I want to hear more about this language you said you created. Yeah. But that's next show.
That thanks, I'm going to come back with scenarios about the wives. I want to know because I think it's just. I think you have a fascinating world, and you've created your own language, so I want to hear about all that as well.
And this is the first time the whole room has just been right on the guests.
Yes. And this is the first time that you haven't said anything ridiculous, by the way.
Yes, I have to. I'm proud of you, Gio.
Actually, what? Go to hell.
All right, so we're out of here.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.